In training mode, you're focusing on eating well, you're focusing on recovery, and I wanted an ice cream that aligned with that sort of lifestyle. Yeah, after looking at the ice cream aisle, you just can't believe how much garbage there is out there. It's loaded with calories, sugar, terrible ingredients, and I just couldn't believe that there was no such thing as an ice cream that had a higher protein count.
One of our mantras from the onset was prepare to be big. And we wanted to just operate under the impression that we're going to be a national brand in a couple of years.
The hours are obviously very long. There's a lot of pressure. I want to talk about how you guys manage your stress, any daily habits, any mental shift that you guys had to make to keep the momentum up.
Man, there's gonna be good days and there's gonna be bad days. There's gonna be fucking terrible days, but I'm so intrinsically deep down tied to my mission and just like have delusional belief in myself, the team, the brand, the product, and the overall mission. That's what gets me up when the days are hard.
But people expect the richness from ice cream. So were there any trade-offs that you guys had to make?
Taste is the leading, like it needs to taste good. If it has added nutritional value, that's great. How can we pack the most nutritional value into one pint of ice cream? And that's how we thoughtfully chose the ingredients we used.
Welcome back to the Duck Pond Podcast. Here we have Joe and Drew, the founder of Smearcase, the brand shaking up the frozen aisle of Froco. Frozen cottage cheese ice cream that packs 40 to 44 grams of protein per pint. Joe and Drew started this during marathon training, craving something sweet and strong, and now he's got Smearcase in Whole Foods, Sprouts, and 100 plus stores less than a year in. Joe and Drew, welcome to the show.
What's up, Jason? Thanks for having us.
Dude, so good to talk to you guys. I saw you guys on the shelf. That's how I found you guys. And then I reached out on LinkedIn, and thank you for hopping on.
Nice. Which store were you in?
I don't know which one exactly. I was in Erewhon, I was in Happier Grocers, I was in Whole Foods. It's whichever one of those three you guys are in. Yep.
Happier and Whole Foods are our top customers. Top account.
Probably those. I was walking through Happier. It's a weird location. It's like somewhere in Chinatown.
Yeah, it's right on canal. Yeah. They're selling fake bags and then luxury CPG products inside. It's wild.
It doesn't make sense to me. But I wanted to dive into the story behind Smearcase. Joe, you've been training for the marathon and you stood in the freezer aisle looking for a protein-rich ice cream. I was training for a half marathon a few months ago, also running through the same thing. I was like, there's not much good protein food. And obviously, I'm not going to go start a protein ice cream. You did. But how did you get to that idea? Like, were you standing there and just think, I need to start something that I could eat?
That's exactly right, Jason. You were in my shoes, so you can resonate. But essentially, it was just a hot summer day in New York City. And on those days, it's impossible to cool off. So I was craving ice cream after a long, sweaty run in the concrete jungle. But, you know, in training mode, you're focusing on eating well, you're focusing on recovery, you're focusing on your training, obviously. And I wanted an ice cream that aligned with that sort of lifestyle, right? Something that I can eat that will refuel me properly and help me recover and help me reach my goals of, you know, certain times or just like completing a marathon. And, after looking at the ice cream aisle, you just can't believe how much garbage there is out there. It's loaded with calories, sugar, terrible ingredients, and I just couldn't believe that there was no such thing as an ice cream that had a higher protein count. So, yeah, I was eating a lot of cottage cheese at the time, and that's when I sort of just put the two together of, like, I can't believe there's no high protein ice cream, and I can't believe that there's no cottage cheese-based ice cream. Given you have ice cream, you have frozen yogurt, you have plant-based alternatives, and cottage cheese is just known for its health benefits. And that was the light bulb moment.
It's great for sauces too. I remember when I was on a training mode, we used cottage cheese as a base to make all sorts of sauce. Same thing, you know, like sauces are so bad for you, but you kind of need it for the flavor.
Yeah, that's so funny. I started making like a fettuccine Alfredo with cottage cheese, and it's... Yeah, you get to enjoy pasta, but it's not heavy cream and terrible ingredients. You're getting additional protein and flavor.
And you started recipe testing in your kitchen. You bought an ice cream maker. Can I assume it's a creamy?
No, it was not a creamy, actually. I think it was just a Cuisinart. But yeah, me, Drew, and my sister were in a little apartment kitchen, just like testing different formulas, like literally learning how to make ice cream without any insider knowledge, just knowing, like, I grew up around food and I'm so passionate and like nerdy about ingredients and health and wellness. So just taking that skill and that knowledge and just putting it into creating something new was super helpful. But yeah, just imagine my kitchen's the size of a closet. So
same.
It was quite fun.
And what was the recipe testing process like? How many times did it take you? And at what point were you like, okay, this is the final version I want to put out?
It didn't take as long as some would think. It took us a couple of tries to find something that really just like sort of blended this nice world of what ice cream is now and what we feel ice cream should be. And we really just wanted to lean into the natural flavors of cottage cheese. You know, our Froco is a little cheesecakey, but it was super important for us to use natural sugar. And we had some, like, as outsiders to the ice cream industry, we had some happy accidents being using collagen as a protein booster. And then also, like, the glue that holds our ice cream together. So, yeah, it was just, like, making it, testing a batch, tasting it on the spot, and then just making another one that we tinkered and just like got feedback from the last batch.
And what was both your background? You said you dabble in food a little bit, but did you guys work in the food industry at all? Were you guys marketers in the past?
Yeah, so I grew up, yeah, my dad has owned delis and restaurants. I made bagels for him. But in college, I had my own clothing brand. That's how Drew and I met. And then I was in e-commerce doing digital marketing, work at startups, but have always had the entrepreneurial itch.
That's amazing. And can we talk a little bit more about Smearcase? Does that name derive from something? Because when I first saw it, I was like, oh, it's a spread company. And I looked closer. It's like, okay, it's not a spread company. It's clearly ice cream. How did you come up with Smearcase?
Yeah, so Smearcase literally translates to spreadable cheese in German. But it was used in reference to cottage cheese, like, and the Pennsylvania Dutch and certain parts of PA, Maryland, Michigan, like pockets throughout the country, different cultures use the term smearcase in reference to cottage cheese or cottage cheese based desserts. So for us, it was like a way to pay homage to our not so secret ingredient. It's also very polarizing. It's memorable. And we often get the question, what does it mean? So for us, it's just a way to engage people and let the kind of product speak for itself on shelf without being too literal. And I think it's proven to be a pretty compelling name.
It's an easy name to remember, even for someone that has trouble pronouncing things. I could pronounce that word easily. It's memorable. And diving into your packaging for a little bit, the design's pretty simple, but it's effective. Were there any challenges with coming up with the design? And how did traditional ice cream designs influence your design decisions?
Interesting.
Maybe you want to start, Joe, or you want me to?
It was going off the name, right? Like the name, we wanted it bold, punchy, strong, in your face, right? And we didn't want it to come across whimsical or gluttonous. And like, we didn't want it to say dessert. We wanted it to say function. So we did go through like a handful of designs. We settled on this because it just looked timeless. It was classic. It was a bit nostalgic. And to us, it said protein and function versus, indulgent and gluttonous.
Yeah, just to elaborate, because I think Joe's having audio issues, at least on my end. And to Joe's point, like, we did not want it to be this indulgent, gluttonous packaging. And if you look at most ice creams today, they have an arched logo or they have some unique bubbly font. Or they have like this dripping motif. Like, it's very common in the ice cream aisle to see a bunch of colors, bending, bubbly letters. And we like, yes, ice cream's inherently fun, but we felt like those brands are just masking bad ingredients by looking whimsical. And we just wanted to do something different, zig while everyone zagged, and say, Look, this is a highly functional premium product. We're going to put the kettlebell callouts right on there so that people know that this is benefiting them. And then kind of the circle with that kind of ribbon is supposed to be sort of aspirational. Again, just like small design cues that I think set us apart. Everyone and their brother has an opinion on our packaging, and I think that's very common whenever something's new in the world is people want to critique, but like largely just positive reviews across the board on the brand design. Like we constantly get that our brand and content strategy are top notch. And that has to do a lot with Joe's background.
You guys got 40 and 40 grams of protein in every single tub. You guys got collagen, it's low fat, but people expect the richness from ice cream. So were there any trade-offs that you guys had to make? And what was the most difficult one? Was it flavor, texture, or ingredients?
Oof. Wow.
I
Gone are the
mean,
days where health can't taste bad. You know what I mean? Can you guys hear me okay?
it's
Okay,
better,
cool.
yeah.
People used to eat freaking kale chips because they were healthy, right? I think gone are those days where people sacrifice flavor for function. Now taste is the leading, like it needs to taste good. If it has added nutritional value, that's great. But yeah, for us was like, how can we pack the most nutritional value into one pint of ice cream? And that's how we thoughtfully chose the ingredients we used. We wanted it to be as close to ice cream as possible, so that's why we used raw cane sugar. We didn't want to use any artificial sweeteners, mostly because of the processing of them, and then two, just the flavor profile of them, and it would have ultimately affected the creaminess and the texture of our product. So yeah, a lot of thought went into it, but I think our customer is cognizant of the macros, but they're mostly looking at the ingredients.
Love that. Looking back for both of you, what was the decision that you guys made in the early days of the company that you would do differently today, knowing what you know now? Something that shaped the way that you run Smearcase today, or just a mistake that you can look back on and be like, damn, I need to fix that.
It's a great question, but I almost feel like we don't have any of those major blunders yet. I mean, we kind of know being in CPG and being in an early stage business, like they happen, and sometimes they happen in a big enough way where it puts you out of business. But one of our mantras from the onset was prepare to be big. So every partner we worked with, we wanted to have a quality and capacity standard. And we wanted to just operate under the impression that we're going to be a national brand in a couple of years. And we're proud to say, after being in market for a little over a year, we're on pace to be national next year. We're in 7 states today, so we're pretty excited about what we're building. I mean, I think we definitely toyed around with should we enter with pints or should we enter with novelties? Should we enter with these flavors or those flavors? I mean, we made a conscientious decision to not launch with a chocolate, because chocolate prices were exceeding copper, and they continue to do. And then going back to your last question, like we're super conscientious about the ingredients. So we use a seed oil-free peanut butter, a soy-free chocolate. So for us to get a soy-free chocolate at in those early stages, the margins would be pretty low for that unit. And we know that that unit would do very well because chocolate inherently does well. But that was a conscious decision we made, and we hope to have one out next year. We know it's, inevitable to be in this space, but now that our production capacity has increased and our volume has increased, we expect that to be like a more fruitful product from a unit economics perspective. I don't know, what blunders? I mean, we often send a lot of product on dry ice that doesn't make it, because we're mailing frozen across the country to buyers and investors. But that's
That's part of the
part of
game.
the yeah.
I think your marketing experience, both of you were in e-com in the past, definitely helped minimize a lot of those mistakes, right? I think a lot of first-time founders, especially in the CPG space, especially for frozen foods, just don't understand the logistical challenges that you guys might know, right? Like you guys have shipped things in the past. You know how things are in the summer heat. So I think from my perspective, I think that's why you guys were able to avoid a lot of those mistakes.
Yeah, I think Joe and I have different backgrounds, both academically and professionally, and they pair up so well together that has allowed us to be extremely thoughtful, but also move fast. Everyone says execution eats strategy for breakfast, and I've been practicing corporate strategy for the last 4 years, and I can say for certain the companies that win are the ones that actually do things and then learn from any mistakes, as opposed to sitting in a room and whiteboarding forever and not doing anything. And you know, it doesn't hurt that I spent 6 years in risk management, so I want to think things through from every angle. But Joe and I, like, we complement each other in that speed becomes the priority, and we don't want to let ourselves contemplate for too long. So I think it's just allowed us to be really thoughtful in the business model and all the facets there, in our go-to-market approach. I mean, it's not to say it's not hard and that mistakes won't come, but I think that we have kind of a unique dynamic in that regard.
100%. You guys got into Whole Foods and Sprouts in under a year, right? Like, that's incredible, extremely impressive. What was the process to pitching your product to retail buyers? Did you go to trade shows? Did you cold email them, show up to their stores? That's quite rare for you to just get shelf space in a very competitive market.
Yeah, we launched in New York. Pretty much our welcome party was the Fancy Food Show last July. And that's where we got in front of buyers. That's where we got in front of retailers and just like strategic partners. So we had just come off of a production run. We had all this product to sell into stores, and we were ready to say yes to a lot of these commitments. So buyers were literally tasting it on the spot and then placing orders on the spot. And during that show, a lot of Whole Foods reps came by our booth and were just sort of mind blown that we cracked the code on cottage cheese ice cream. And then a month later, we got an email through our website from Whole Foods corporate asking for us to apply to their upcoming category review. So it just really we were just really fortunate that we had something that was truly different, unique, innovative, and it just hit the trends of everybody knows cottage cheese is healthy. Everybody's prioritizing protein, and people are looking for new and novel ways to consume it. You know, our generation isn't eating cottage cheese out of the tub. They want it in different form factors, and we're delivering on that. So it just put us in a position of leverage and a little bit of right timing, a little bit of luck, and that recipe allowed us to just capitalize on opportunities. I think when you're in CPG, there are three factors to stand out, in my opinion, and that's the product, the brand, and the form factor. We hit pretty much on every one of those, and it's just a ripe recipe for success in this super highly competitive industry.
It's really good to see that buyers are tasting it on a spot and placing POs immediately. That's such a good sign. Like, that has to feel incredible.
Yeah, we were just in Colorado actually last month at Newtopia, and kind of same playbook, right? Like, we obviously have a broader distribution footprint now. We have more product than we did before, including a new SKU that is strawberry. And it was just so promising to just be at this event and see buyers from all the big mass retailers and natural retailers across the country say, hey, like, how do I get this in store? And for where we have distribution today, we're already in store for several of those banners, and we're actively working to get, you know, into the right DCs so that we can support the other stores and launch in their areas. But yeah, we're almost having the problem of having like too much retail opportunity and having to be super conscientious about like what was our original go-to-market strategy, and is this aligned? What have we learned about our customer base that would indicate whether or not we're going to do well in this store early on? And then just learning some of the nuances about working with different retailers and how to be successful on shelf, because they all have a different promo strategy or a different customer base with different expectations. So just making sure we're like extremely collaborative and we're saying yes at the right time.
It's incredible to see you guys take a operation from your kitchen, recipe testing there, and then moving it to the manufacturers. I want to dive in a little bit deeper on finding the manufacturer that can recreate your recipe and also making sure that your recipe stays safe with you guys. Like, I think a lot of CPG founders get into this and they're thinking, okay, I just made a secret ingredient or a secret formulation to something that's great. How do I make sure that I find someone that can recreate it, but also protect my IP? How did you guys approach that?
Yeah, we hired a consultant to help us find a manufacturer. And then from there, you just got to get NDAs in place, make sure that things are protected, making sure that you're working with good people. And just like really doing your due diligence on certain partners. And, you know, since we're a small brand and a lot of these co-man have MOQs, you want to work with a business that believes in your mission early on and sees the potential, that is willing to work with you with where you're at, and that's willing to grow with you. And ultimately, you want to find partners that will make what you're doing better without sacrificing the quality or the mission. Like, that was super important for us, was not sacrificing the integrity of our ingredient list and only making decisions to increase the quality and performance of our product. And yeah, just like Drew said, like preparing to be big, like we did our best to align with partners early on that meet us where we are now and want to see us go further. Because that partnership at the end of the day, that relationship is what it's all about. You know, we're working with other people who want to make a living and who want to help other people succeed. I think that is what being human is about. And if you partner with those types of people, I think that's where, you know, the best businesses succeed. Because it's on a personal level that just so happens to be professional.
I agree. With a high growth brand like this, the hours are obviously very long. There's a lot of pressure. I want to talk about how you guys manage your stress, any daily habits, any mental shift that you guys had to make to keep the momentum up.
This is Joe's wheelhouse. You got to answer this one first. Dude, he's full of rituals.
Yeah, I mean, you're catching me at a, like, transparently, tired, like, a little grumpy, I'm not gonna lie. Just, like, I had a fun weekend celebrating a friend's wedding, but very conscious that entire time I was away. It was like, damn, like, can I be doing more? Like, I'm not working, like, yeah. So with that being said, like, how do I handle stress? Like, man, there's going to be good days and there's going to be bad days. It's going to be fucking terrible days. But I'm so intrinsically deep down tied to my mission and just like have delusional belief in myself, the team, the brand, the product, and the overall mission that's what gets me up when the days are hard, you know, and just having that tenacious will to attack and refuse failure. Like, failure is just not an option. I have zero plan B. Nobody's coming to save me. My back's against the wall. I start my days really just trying to root down, reminding myself that God is in charge and his will, you know, carry me forward. From there, I always get a workout in, you know, weightlifting, some cardio, sauna, and then a nice cup of coffee, and then just eating well, prioritizing sleep. But yeah, it's tough, man. Like, this isn't for the faint-hearted. It's not for the weak. But I'm not doing this, you know, strictly for financial reward. I'm doing this because I freaking love it. Like, it's in my blood. It's in my bones to do this and to be, and I just feel like I'm the perfect man for this job. And just leaning into that will sort of pick you up when you're feeling down.
They say the greatest founders are the most delusional. You have to be so delusional that you cannot lose, and you just have to keep ramming through every single door that gets in front of you. And I love what you said about working out. I love what you said about the mental shift. Where can our listeners find you guys? You guys have a store locator on your site. You guys are in Sprouts. Where else are you guys coming out on this year?
Yeah, the best place to follow along is at Eat Smearcase on Instagram, smearcase.com. You can follow us on LinkedIn, TikTok. If you just search Smearcase, that's where we announce new stores. That's where we have the store locator. Yeah, like Drew said, we're like adding states every month. So I forget what you said, Drew. I mean, this is
seven
states.
We're up to as of this month. Yeah.
Awesome. These are things I should know. Seven states, Whole Foods in the tri-state is the best place to find us. Sprouts down in Florida. And then we just launched in Nashville at Turnip Truck. That's big news. We're on GoPuff in the city, DoorDash, Instacart. But stay tuned, follow along, because we're going to be launching new states every month and into next year.
That's incredible. Joe and Drew, thank you guys so much for taking your time to chat with me. This has been really fun, and congratulations on all the success you guys have had so far.
Thanks, Jason.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Jason. Yeah.